Okay, I am very excited to introduce On Laying the Points for the second time on Laying the Points. But before this NFL season, a guy that I really respect in the NFL handicapping industry. You can find him at Sharp Clark on Twitter. That's at SharpClarke on Twitter. You can also find him sharpclark.com for more of his content. And it's more than just NFL content, Clark. You get into a lot of different great stuff there. I love the way you approach NFL handicapping and how holistic you are. What's going on, my man? Thank you for coming back and laying the points.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Chris. Excited about this conversation.
Me too. It's NFL season. It's around the corner, my man. Before we get into some NFL stuff, though, just wanted to ask you, and I'm sure many in our audience are probably wondering too, because I feel like last year especially, you were, I mean, whenever I was on Twitter, I feel like you were putting out a tweet that was getting a lot of traction. You just had a lot going on Twitter. I know you're writing all the time too. You're putting out your picks very transparently always. So coming out of last season, you know, just tell me your experience last season, kind of how that went, and maybe, you know, some things that you took from last season and that you're bringing into this season, an even better handicapper.
Yeah, well, that's a big question. Last season, I was fortunate enough to connect with like a bigger group, and start working with them on getting my action down, you know, more quietly. And that went really well. And so I think, you know, we're going to transition into doing more of that. And I'm going to be doing less publicly on Twitter. You know, I'm not selling picks. I'm not doing any paid content like that. So it's going to be a bit of a different experience. And I think there's definitely some pros to that I'm excited about. You know, obviously less to focus on the public side means, you know, more focus on the betting side, which I'm very excited about. You know, increasing my leverage on my bets is very exciting. You know, I will still be on Twitter because I really value the relationships and the interactions. I've gotten so many messages from people. It's, you know, it's funny that the trolls will comment on your stuff publicly, but the people that respect what you're doing will message you privately. And so I've had so many good conversations with people that really value what I do that have made me want to keep, you know, having some kind of public presence and continuing to build those relationships.
100%. And, you know, a big reason why I wanted to bring you on this pod too is because I do feel like you were at such a big scale last season that, you know, I mean, I was seeing what was going on too, right? You're getting a lot of traction with your tweets, but you're also getting, you know, the typical vitriol, right? You know, people want to debate you. They want to start little arguments about little things. Totally agree with you about the part you said about DMs, right? The people who tend to actually want to engage in a deeper conversation with you and kind of respect you, they'll try to communicate with you in a different way usually. But the vitriol that you saw, you know, just like some of the, I guess, the pressure that comes along with that too, right? Because I know that I felt that too, especially when you have to produce NFL content along with it, right? There's kind of that difference, right? Between, okay, I have to write something for the audience this week. Talk about, did some of the vitriol that you faced or just the constant content creation, did that have an effect on your handicapping at all? Or did you find that you were just, you know, like able to stay above it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely impacts me. Like, you know, I think if you're selling picks or if you're producing paid content in the betting space, I think that you kind of have to let people do that. Like, I think it's disingenuous and lacking transparency to block people that criticize you. Like, I think that's an important part of the process. But now that I'm not doing any of that, like, I have no problem blocking and muting people that are just trolling. You know, it's like I try to get as much as I can out of every interaction, even people that are criticizing me. And I think I've learned a lot from the people that have a negative attitude towards me. But once I realize that every comment is just, you know, someone not trying to understand what I'm actually doing and not making any effort to contribute, then I can just block or mute them and move on. And that's been a really positive step for me, because now I can, like you said, focus more on the handicapping, more on the betting. I'm also not listening to any content podcasts this year. It's something where I just want to do my process. And I think thinking independently is an actual benefit to my process. So both, you know, reading less stuff on Twitter and listening to fewer podcasts on NFL stuff, I think it's going to be a little bit of a different experience for me.
Yeah, 100%. And I always kind of get in my head about that too, right? Especially when you're in a contest, you know, as the week kind of trudges on, right? There are more podcasts coming out. There are more things that you can read, you know, for people that you respect in the industry. But how much do you allow that to affect your originality, right? Where you are in your power ratings and your handicapping, et cetera. Like, do you usually digest a lot of I'm sure you don't have time to digest a lot of different podcasts and content, but do you a few kind of by your side that you respect and, you know, make it part of your process to listen to or to read during the week? Or is it strictly Clark's originality and you try to avoid other content and other opinions?
Definitely the latter. I try to make it 100% my own process. I believe that there is actual value in thinking differently than the market, not just because not just in an effort to achieve accuracy, but in an effort to distinguish your process from the processes that are informing the market. There's actual value in that. And so, you know, I try to avoid others' opinions. And when I do listen to other stuff, it's more just to fill time and get a sense of what the market's doing than it is to inform anything that I'm doing on the betting side.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, and you call yourself an NFL originator. Not everybody in our audience probably knows what that means. I mean, you're kind of touching on it now, but could you just give us like a quick synopsis of what that means? What is an NFL originator?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to explain it is I make my own numbers on games and then bet, you know, my opinions. I'm not looking at what the market's doing and trying to anticipate market movement. I'm not aggregating others' opinions into my own. Like, I have my own model that I built, my own methodology that I built, and my own process. And then I bet that against the market.
Can I ask this? I know this isn't on our show sheet today, but the process of building your own model, like how long did that take? Is it a continual build? I think it's kind of the notion, right, in our industry right now is if you don't have a model, then, you know, you're kind of behind, right? Because you need some kind of structure, some kind of foundation to what you're doing. You're obviously not going to post your model, you know, here on the screen for me or on Twitter or anything, because it's your model, right? It's what you do every day. But could you just give us kind of some like insight into the process of building that and, you know, starting that from the ground up?
Yeah, I like that you asked if it's ongoing, because it's definitely ongoing. Every year I've tweaked it and added things, and, you know, I spend most of the off season studying stuff. You know, and I can't post my model because my Python program is up to 3,000 lines. So it wouldn't really be practical. But basically, you know, the first year that I was doing this was 2019. And I just kind of came up with the concept for how I want to quantify things, like basically create my own metrics from watching film. And then, you know, each off season, I've developed that further. So, you know, first of all, it was just a concept. And then it was a methodology for making it numbers. And then I tweaked that. And then I turned that into a sort of simple linear regression model. And then this offseason, I taught myself Bayesian statistics and basically changed my model into a Bayesian approach, which basically, for the people that don't know, it basically just says, instead of only looking at what has happened and making projections based on what has happened, you have priors, and then things occur that impact those priors to create, you know, what you think after the thing that occurred, right? So going into the season, not all teams are equal, right? So if the Chiefs win by 20 week one, that's different than if the Panthers win by 20 week one. You're not going to put them at the same, you know, the same place. So doing that, you know, mathematically has I think enhanced my process. And then the last thing that I've added is with you know, 5 years of data now, I'm able to sort of run some more macro concepts, you know, over the data to identify, you know, like, I don't know if you read Billy Walter's book, but he has this chapter where he talks about his NFL process. And yeah, he's like, you know, teams coming off Monday night on the road are worth, you know, this many points or whatever. Like, I don't do that approach. I think there's some major flaws with that. But the concept of identifying things that you can quantify over time, like, I'm able to do that because I have enough data now. So on top of my, you know, basic, you know, spread, I actually have three spread models. On top of those, I have some sort of concepts that I'm looking to attack, you know, on a week-to-week basis. Like, hey, are these parameters filled? And if so, that might be a game I'm interested in.
I love that. Yeah. And we're going to get to, you know, some strict NFL stuff here soon. But a big reason why I wanted to have Clark on the podcast is to hear about his process and your understanding why now. You know, just it seems like, you know, I use that word holistic. You know, I think that word is overused a lot today, right? But, you know, but I think that you're one of the rare guys that does try to take into all these different things, including qualitative stuff, right? Like, is there, this is the last question about the model, I promise. But, you know, like at the end of the day, if your model is spinning out that you have an edge on a game, is there like a step two, just like quick, like kind of qualitative check that you can't quite put numbers to just yet? Or have you found a way to put numbers to pretty much everything, even those qualitative factors?
I don't think I'll ever find a way to put numbers to everything. I don't think that's possible. And if that was possible,
I appreciate that. Yeah.
If it was possible, then what are we doing, right? We're not going to be able to beat the market. So my qualitative stuff is mostly on the front end. So the metrics that I create involve some qualitative evaluations. Right. And so, yes, there are some things I do on the back end in terms of matchups and stuff, but it's not really a big part of what I do. I've actually found that matchup-based handicapping has not been particularly predictive. It's like, you know, close to 50-50. And you know, when it goes the way that you expect it to, I've been like, oh, yeah, I nailed that handicap. And then it doesn't go the way. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, this is the reason. And over time, I'm learning that those matchup stuff is very, very rarely actually making a difference. So I moved away from that more into, you know, trusting my numbers and trusting these sort of macro factors that I'm looking at, you know, like can't go into too much detail, but yeah, most of the qualitative stuff is on the metric creation side for me.
Gotcha. Okay. And one last question just about your process. Again, you can follow Sharp Clark at Sharp Clark with an E at the end on Twitter. Now you may know Clark, I think we talked about this before, but I have a background in theology, philosophy. You know, that's my bachelor's degree. Had a lot of different ideas of what I was going to do from there. Did not end up in any of those avenues at this point. But I love your integration of the Taoist philosophy on your website. So tell us more, like how did you get to the point where you're incorporating some Eastern philosophy in your product? I'm a big fan of Eastern philosophy. Like I loved everything that I learned about it when I was in school. I need to pick up a few more books again because I kind of miss it, to be honest. But just tell the audience how you incorporate these philosophical ideas into your handicapping.
Yeah, this one's a big question. I mean, I have, I don't know, eight blog posts and counting on how Taoism has influenced my approach. But, you know, I've been studying Taoist philosophy for like 20 years now. It's been really meaningful to me. I grew up with a Christian religious tradition as well. And the thing that I found that differentiates Taoism is that whereas a lot of sort of religious and other philosophical approaches try to teach you how to sort of mold yourself or the world. Like, you know, in Christianity, it's like you are inherently evil and your goal is to try to resist the temptation and try to like live more in line with God. And then, you know, Buddhism is like, you're trying to escape the ups and downs of like being attached to things. And Taoism kind of goes the other way and says, like, look at how things are and try to just align yourself with it. So it's like a constant learning process. It's like there's the way things are and you don't try to resist it. You try to align yourself with it and then sort of, you know, understand it by being part of it. And so I think with my handicapping approach, it's very much like adapting to what I see. You know, the NFL changes over time. And so not having rigid opinions, not having strong, you know, thoughts on, you know, here's my top 10 quarterbacks in order, or like, you know, here's my teams going into the season, power rated this, and like, this is what's going to happen, have to happen for me to change. Or like, you know, I'm looking at the schedule and I'm in week eight, I'm going to, you know, bet them to win the division because their schedule fit. Like all that kind of stuff is trying to imprint your view and your predictions onto something. Whereas I'm much more like holding my opinions very loosely and everything changes my opinions, the way I do things. I don't know in week eight, whether I'm going to want to back a team because that's 7 weeks of very important data that's about to happen on the field. So yep. My approach is very fluid, very much reacting to what I see. And when I do have strong opinions, you know, like if I see evidence to counter that, like I release the strength of that opinion. And I think that's very, very important. That's why I'm comfortable talking about teams and stuff, because, you know, people say, how are you going to give away your edge? Like, if you like this team, why are you going to talk about it? And it's like, I may not in 3 weeks because new data is going to come in. And, you know, people get so attached to their opinions that I think it becomes a block for them in their handicapping process.
Yeah, I really, really love that mentality. And, you know, not to get too theoretical and up in the clouds, it is 9 a.m. on a Tuesday that Clark and I are talking. There are no substances involved, people. Well, maybe a little bit of coffee on my end. But Yeah, I mean, I always say, which, you know, I maybe some people would roll their eyes at something like this, but I really believe this. If you let the bets come to you, you're going to win more than like searching for the bet, right? I mean, I think that's what happens a lot, especially in content creation, right? We know that we have to put something out, right? We know that in order to increase the traction, our followership, whatever we're trying to do, sell picks, we have to put something out, right? And there's a pressure in that. So it reorients your mind to where you're looking for it, looking to attack, as opposed to, you know, just having everything set, right? Your foundations in line, your models, your process, and then seeing what is showing itself to you. I think that's what you're speaking to. In some weeks, right, that might amount to what, like 3 or 4 plays, you know, maybe even fewer than that, right? Because that is how the NFL is. There might not be a lot of opportunity in such a sharp market. But like allowing it to come to you, right? I can get down a real rabbit hole here, Clark, when we get into philosophical stuff, but I love that approach. So I just had to say at least that much. All right, go ahead.
I do have one other thing on that is that I think it's important to be the person that you are. And so like everybody's betting style is going to be different. A lot of people say, you know, why are you trying to beat NFL sides? That's the hardest market to beat. You know, Why not attack something easier? And, you know, my answer is just, it's in my nature to do the most challenging thing and try to be the best at it. That's who I am as a person. And so, you know, ultimately I'm not going to fight the person I am and try to like find an easier, you know, smaller market to beat, because that's just not, you know, not what I want to be doing. So, you know, a lot of times people ask me that question and the answer is basically, I'm just trying to be me.
100%. Yeah. I mean, and that is a great question that people ask, right? I mean, look at the WNBA market, a very immature market still, right? A sport that's growing. But like I found a lot of success in WNBA this summer, but am I quite as, I mean, I'm not going to be quite as involved in the WNBA from start to finish, nothing against the league, but, you know, I think there's some internal biases that lead me to the NFL too, just from the way that I grew up and always loved it. But yeah, I love that approach, Clark. And I think that our audience hopefully is learning something just about process, because we can talk NFL teams all day, but really I believe, and it sounds like you do too, that success in betting often is more about what you're doing than what the teams are doing, right? Than what X or A player is doing. It's really like starts and ends with you, right? And then of course you're the one making the bets. So love that stuff, Clark. We could talk about that like all day and all night, that's for sure. I gotta have a beer with you sometime and talk about that. I don't know when that's gonna happen, Clark. We're gonna do it at some point. But okay, let's get into NFL stuff. The meat and potatoes, if you will, of a podcast like this. And I'll just start with this question and we can go down a lot of different rabbit hole. We can get into a lot of different stuff, but let's start with just 1 to 3 teams that you think will surprise people this season. You could talk win totals, ATS results, or any other angles you'd like. What are a few teams you're looking at?
Yeah, I think one team that might surprise people is the Denver Broncos. I don't have a strong take on Sean Payton because I wasn't doing this in the level of detail that I'm doing it now for most of his career with Drew Brees. But my understanding is that, you know, Drew Brees ran a very, you know, quick hitting offense where he would diagnose the defense and react very quickly and make the throws. You know, he would go downfield when he had to, but most of it was just good ball placement, good decision making, good anticipation. And Russell Wilson was the opposite of Drew Brees in that sense. And so, you know, him failing in Denver, I mean, not just the first year without Sean Payton, but also the second year when Sean Payton came in, was somewhat predictable. And I watched Bo Nix's college film and really, really liked his decision making and anticipation and ball placement. It was all quick hitters, you know, and it's easy when someone's open on every play, like it was in Oregon. It's going to be very, very different in the NFL for him. I don't anticipate that level of success. But what I wanted to see in the preseason game was, one, him showing that ability, and two, like, can he test downfield? And even in limited action, he did both of those. You know, I was impressed with him in his preseason game. And I think Bo Nix has a good future in that offense with Sean Payton. And so the Broncos defense has been sort of up and down the last few years. Like 2 years ago, they were elite for most of the year, and then they kind of fell off at the end, and last year they were very, very bad for like a 4-week stretch, and then they kind of got it together a little bit later. So I think if the Broncos defense is somewhere in the middle and they can get anything out of the run game, they've got a few decent running backs and a good defensive line. You know, I think this is a team that, 5.5 is just a little bit, you know, it's projecting Bo Nix's downside, in my opinion. Whereas I think his range of outcomes is much wider and includes, you know, some surprising outcomes to the upside.
So it doesn't surprise me, and I really appreciate the fact that most of your analysis on the Denver Broncos, of course, it's always going to be about the whole team ultimately, right? We have a lot of character, influential characters. I mean, in the NFL, the head coach matters a lot. But you talked a lot about Bo Nix, right? Which in my power ratings, there's no single player or influence more than a quarterback, and in particular, the quarterback-coach combination. And I totally agree with what you said. I mean, Sean Payton is a guy who wants to train his new guy, right? And Russell Wilson was the opposite of that, right? Like Russ came in there with his own trainer, right? Like he's in a different room getting, you know, like his own stretches done. Sean Payton did not like that very much. That was obvious. That was out in the, you know, reports about the team. So now he has a guy who we know is he's as pro ready, I think, as any quarterback in his draft. And a very trainable kid, you know, like who's ready to go, right? Who's ready to learn. So I think that can only result in positive things for the Broncos. A lot does depend on their defense too, I agree, because they have to be at least average, right? Like defensive line, a lot of upside, but they're young. A lot of youth on that team. Justin Simmons now probably not going to be there. So it's interesting. But I think there's a lot of potential for their offense. I love that you brought up the Denver Broncos because I've been on them too. What's another team that you like?
The other team I wanted to talk about is actually, it's surprising to the downside potentially. I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, sure.
There's been a lot of optimism around the Indianapolis Colts, this season. I've seen a lot of people, sort of a lot of, you know, content creators talking about their overs and division and all that kind of stuff. And I think it is very premature to expect good things from Anthony Richardson still. Like, you know, he came in very raw and got very little playing time as a rookie. And honestly, that playing time was pretty inconsistent. Like a lot of his throws were wildly inaccurate. He also obviously has, you know, contributes a ton with the run game. And Shane Steichen is incredible at taking a mobile quarterback and using that to enhance the offense. Like you have to give credit where credit is due, but there's just a good chance that with, you know, receivers that are mostly question marks, like I'm not as impressed with Michael Pittman as most people. And then after that, it's a lot of young guys that haven't really proven themselves. You know, Josh Downs just got hurt. And I think it's a lot to anticipate, you know, basically big things from Anthony Richardson. I'm not a huge fan of their defense either. And I think their schedule for the first, you know, basically up until their late bye week is pretty tough. And so they're going to have to be very good to win games. And I'm skeptical. And then the last thing is, you know, I like to have multiple avenues to win futures bets. And I think, you know, if the Colts are as good as people think they are, their schedule is tough. There's no guarantee they're going to win 9 or 10 games. Like a lot of games are toss-ups, things happen. And then two, if they're not as good as they think they are, there's no way they're going to get there against that schedule. And then three, Anthony Richardson got injured twice last year in 4 games and runs and gets hit. And Shane Steichen has said he's going to keep running because that's what he does well. You know, if he gets hurt, Joe Flacco is not Gardner Minshew. Like, I don't really understand the fit there. Is Steichen's offenses have always been very, you know, zone read, quarterback run, pass option heavy. And Minshew did that well. He got out, you know, to the flat. You know, he would scramble. He would make things happen with his legs to create time for his subpar receivers to get open downfield and then chuck it. Joe Flacco, especially at this point in his career, is I'm going to throw the ball as soon as I see pressure coming my way. And these receivers are not good enough to get quick separation. Flacco can't run. He can't create things with his legs. And so I don't think that there's an upside to Indianapolis that doesn't involve Richardson staying healthy the entire season. And I'm skeptical of that too. So I think there's multiple ways that the Colts could be disappointing here. And I just think that the hype is only baking in the upside, whereas I think there's some significant downside. So I think, you know, however you want to play that, alternate win total unders is a good look, but they've been kind of bet down after I bet it, so I don't know what the current price is, but I'm just not as optimistic on the Colts as I think most people.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I mostly agree with you on the Colts. I mean, I do think that their defensive line could be pretty darn good, and that could be a difference maker in some games, but even looking at like week one, right, there, it's a very short line. I know that they're at home, but with all the hype that the Houston Texans are getting, and assure, I mean, the market is saying that the Colts are probably going to be very competitive in that game. And I'm not sure, like, I'm still kind of in between, you know, do I ignore what the market is sort of whispering to us and just, you know, go Houston there? Because in a lot of ways, Houston is a more proven team. They have at this point, CJ Stroud, to me, is a proven quarterback. He went through a lot of adversity last year, a lot of tough games, tough situations, and performed really well. And there's just a lot of buy signs on Houston, right? But then you got these Indianapolis Colts, who there are more question marks than there are answers about that team. I totally agree with you. But they do – I like Shane Steichen as a coach and just kind of figuring things out. But to your point, it's like that's going to be the first week, right? Like I think it's going to take some time for things to come together if Anthony Richardson can stay healthy, which there's a big question mark around that as well, I would say, at this point. You got at least one more team for us to – look at
that. That was all I prepared.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, let's go with futures. Do you have any extra futures that you'd like to talk about? Just any of your favorites that stand out, whether that's player props or win totals or winning division, anything like that?
I mean, I don't do a ton of player props, but sort of aligned with my take on the Colts, I played Richardson's under, I think it was 3,200 passing yards. So I think, you know, you can't get a ton down and putting money on a bet that's not going to settle for months is never the best way to handle money. But I just think that even if he plays all 17 games, this is going to be a run heavy team, both by the running back and by him. The receivers that he has, I don't think are the types of receivers that are going to rack up passing yardage. And then you get a free win if he gets hurt before, you know, week 14 or whatever. So I think his under on passing yards is a good look. And then similarly, Drake May's passing yards, I think is 2,400. That one is one where I see not a great situation to thrust a rookie into. And I think they've got Jacoby Brissett to kind of help him develop over time. I don't think they're going to rush him too early. And if they do, yeah, again, it's not a receiving group unless they get Brandon Ayuk, maybe wait for the dust to settle on that. Yep. It's not a receiving group that's going to lead to a lot of passing yards. So it's just going to be a team that tries to slow the game down, run the ball, play defense. And I don't think Drake May is going to be involved in a bunch of shootouts. So those are two, you know, season-long player props I like. And then just sort of along with the lines of what we talked about, I did play Broncos over 5.5 wins, and I played Colts under 8.5, under 7.5 wins.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of – under 8.5 was a great grab, in my opinion, right? Like that was an authoritative win total that came out on a team that has a lot of question marks. Just hearing 8.5 and the fact that it was ever there is kind of amazing to me anyway. Week one lines, let's get into that. I mean, obviously, we are what, under 4 weeks away? We're 3.5 weeks away from the first game of the NFL season, not even three, even less than 3.5 weeks until the Ravens and Chiefs. But any one of these week one lines stand out to you, Clark, as something that you're already thinking is something that you're, or maybe you already did attack?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to talk about week one because I'm still getting money down on those bets. So I think one that, you know, I've sort of already got exposure to and I think is maybe, you know, maybe going to stay, like won't get much different is the Browns Cowboys total is 44.5 some spots still. And I think that's a little bit high because the Cowboys offensive line is very different than what it looked last year. And in fact, the Cowboys have been living off their offensive line for years. And, you know, we saw one game last year where they were missing both Biadasz, the center, and Tyron Smith, the tackle. Who have both been traded, who have both left the Cowboys now. And that was that game against the Cardinals where they were something like 12.5 point favorites and they lost by 12. It was a bad showing. And you can't draw too much from one game and be like, oh, well, I guess the Cowboys are the worst team in the league this year. But I do think that Dak Prescott has shown susceptibility to differences in play based on offensive line play. CeeDee Lamb is still holding in, whatever. I'm sure they'll get it resolved. I'm sure it'll be Dak and CeeDee Lamb out there, but there's just so many questions about this offense. And then on the other side, you've got, you know, Deshaun Watson, who just sucks at football. The Browns and Nick Chubb is great, but he's not going to be 100% week one if he does play. So I think there's reasons to, and the Browns defense is obviously elite. The Cowboys defense has some playmakers as well. So this is a game where I think points are going to be a little bit harder to come by than, you know, people might expect it at that number.
Yeah. Like Micah Parsons and that, defensive line for the Cowboys earlier in the season too, kind of trailed off a little bit at the end of the season. But you know, and then of course on the other end, you got some monsters on the Browns, obviously. So yeah, but I mean, 43.5 is right at the number for me too, where it's like the market's almost telling you, yeah, this could go, you know, this could be a 47, but you know, suggesting kind of a lower number there. I think the Cowboys, Clark, are going to, I think this is going to be the year where we actually see the end of an era. If it's not already happening right before the season, because a lot of things are still kind of up in the air with them, but there's a lot of reason to believe that the Cowboys cannot sustain the kind of success that they've had. Like, I don't think they're going to be blowing out teams 45-0 this season. You know, they're yeah. Maybe they still make it to the playoffs, but I think that's going to be a different operation there for Dallas. Anything else in week one stand out for you?
No, not that I can talk about yet.
Can I ask you about this? Cause I'm just interested about your opinion on it. I'm bullish on the Titans +4.5. And there's a lot of change for Tennessee too. A lot of change for Tennessee as well. Obviously, like, I didn't like them getting rid of Mike Vrabel, but that feels like something was happening behind the scenes that we don't know about. That's fine. You know, total regime change, but some real talent. I mean, obviously they have a great a trio of wide receivers there now surrounding DeAndre Hopkins with Calvin Ridley. You know, the other guy from Cincinnati, Tyler Boyd, the names are circulating, Clark, but, you know, so they got some weapons on offense. They still got some guys on defense. And it's a lot to expect Caleb Williams. And you talk about a brand new team in like, you know, a thousand different ways. These Chicago Bears, a lot of pressure hosting that game. Of course, people are going to start to point to the first preseason action of Caleb Williams. He looked good. My goodness, guys, but it is the preseason, right? It's going to feel different week one. So I just cannot, I guess, you know, my perspective on this one is it kind of came to me, right, Clark? Because I could never get on Chicago -4.5 in this position. I mean, like, never. So am I too bullish on this? Are you seeing an avenue for the Chicago Bears to cover that line?
It's a big number. It's not a game that I have an opinion on. I don't know if you have been paying attention to this guy, Harry Crane, on Twitter. He's a statistics professor, but he had an election model that, you know, priced Trump and Kamala Harris and then unallocated. And it's basically a way to quantify, like, the things that you don't know about a prediction in a model, like, have to go in there.
Right.
And this game has a ton of unallocated percentage for me. And so for me to make a play on this game, I would have to have significant strong opinion, and I don't. On the Chicago side, you know, how Caleb Williams reacts week one is a big unknown. But I just love the kid. I think he's a great player. I think he's extremely ready. I think he's got the talent around him to succeed. And I think he's going to be incredible. So, you know, I don't want to fade him right away, but I'm also not expecting him to hit his peak right away, right? So that's kind of a big unknown. And then on the other side, like, I've always given a ton of credit to Mike Vrabel. And so the coaching change in Tennessee, like, they're changing the way they run the offense. They're changing the way they run the team. Like, it has a completely different identity that I'm just having a hard time parsing out. As well as the uncertainty of Will Levis, frankly. Like, he showed a wide range of outcomes in limited action last year. So when you add up all those pieces that I don't have a strong grasp on, this is another, you know, another aspect of the Dallas approach is you say, okay, I'm going to let this play out and I'm going to react to it. And that's kind of how I feel about that game. So I have heard of people that are on the Titans for good reasons. Like, that 4.5 is a good number because it covers a lot of outcomes.
Oh yeah.
Really the Bears have to basically blow them out to cover that. You know, obviously there's some ways that they can sort of win by 7 at the end, like, obviously, but for the most part, this has to be Bears domination for the Bears to be a good bet at -4.5. And that's just asking a lot of a rookie, like you said.
Yeah. All very fair points. And I think, you know, the one thing that I fear is that it's a slow start for the Bears, but, you know, at home, a ton of talent on defense, right? I mean, that's objective at this point, especially the back end. You know, if they at least keep the game close, Caleb Williams certainly has the talent and the talent surrounding him to go on that game winning drive. And it's a 28-23 ending. And I lose that bet. I mean, for sure that I, you know,
that'd be tough.
that would be tough, but I can, like, I agree that everything is there for Caleb. You know, it's just, boy, that is a authoritative number in his first game as an NFL quarterback. That's for sure. All right, last.
I do think. I do think the Bears defense got a little bit overrated at the end of last year. Like,
yeah,
they were playing well, but you know, you look at the people they played against, and I question whether that's sustainable. If that defense drops off some, then asking them to cover 4.5 is a big ask.
Yeah, and you know, impressive against some teams in their division, but it's in their division, right? I mean, of course, those are always going to be tough matches, but yeah, we shall see how that plays out. Matt Eberflus, he could be on the hot seat if things don't materialize there. I'm not sure how I feel about him either, which is another big reason why I'm kind of, you know, or I am on the Titans week one, that's for sure. Okay, final question for you, Clark, because I know that you played in NFL contests before. I believe you said that you had 1 year where you have had a lot of success in the DraftKings contest. Can you just speak to or just inform our audience maybe a little bit about your process or any kind of advice you would give to playing in an NFL contest? Because it is different than NFL handicapping. There are different things to think about. And you talk about pressure. You're starting to do well in those NFL contests, and then your mind can start to go crazy on you as far as that overanalysis goes. I feel like the Taoism could really come into play here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. You got to keep your head. My advice generally is trust yourself and don't just follow the market. Like, you know, there's going to be situations where, you know, you've got a +2.5 on a team and then it closes +1 and you're like, oh, I've got to take this +2.5 because it's 1.5 points off the market line in my favor. Yeah. Like I'm gaining percentages here, but the problem is like one, a ton of people are going to take that for the same reason. And two, like if you look at the percentage of outcomes that fall, you know, +2.5 versus +1, that actually captures a very, very small amount of outcomes, right? And so it's a little different if it's +3.5 to +2.5. I think you almost kind of have to take that because of the value. But in most cases where the market has moved, like I say ignore that and kind of trust your handicap and be like, you know, I see this game differently. Or ignore the game and go to one that you feel, you know, strongly on where there's no value compared to what the line, you know, is fixed at. Because, you know, the year that I won, I came first, I was at 70% and I deliberately avoided all of the lines that had moved, you know, in that way. And I think that, you know, you might lose that way. Like you might end up 48% because, you know, you missed out on all the easy ones, but like those price structures are so top heavy that you're incentivized to take a counter market approach. And I think it's better to kind of go for gold rather than follow the herd, because, you know, what will happen in those years where all those games hit, you know, all the ones that gain value from the fixed line to the closing line, if all those win, then the winner is going to have like 75% and there's going to be tons of people in that 65 to 70% range. And it's going to be harder to find that price structure. But if those don't hit, then that brings the entire level down and you may only have to win 68% to win in that given year. So I think trying to find avenues of victory that don't follow what the market is doing is a good approach in contests.
Yeah, I love it. Do you play Survivor?
I have played Survivor. I've never won a big one. So I don't know that I'm qualified to offer advice on it, but
yeah.
It's fun to play.
I'm not sure if I'm doing Circa Millions this year, the ATS contest, because I think I just might do a double in Survivor. I mean I think it's up to 16 million already. It's incredible. Wow. What they're doing over there at Circa, and you know it's like they always say, right? In Survivor, you really are just competing against yourself. Like, I mean, ultimately, you know, you get to the end, maybe there are some deals, but you know, you just gotta survive, right? You just gotta make it to the end. Which maybe I'm avoiding some of that pressure and stress of the Circa Millions. I say that now, Clark. I'm going to Vegas in a week and a half. I'll be entering into the Circa Millions. I mean, who am I kidding? Anyway, yeah. Clark, so great to have you on the podcast, man. I mean, you're very nuanced in your thinking, but you explain everything so well, from spirituality to handicapping to social media climbing. Sharp Clark is everywhere, and he does it very well. Again, everyone, you can follow him at Sharp Clark on Twitter or check out his website, sharpclark.com. Looking forward to watching and just seeing what you're doing this NFL season and how much success you're having, Clark. And I would love to have you back on the podcast at some point during the season again.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.